She says in Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verses 3 through 4, "Your oils have a pleasing fragrance. Your name is like purified oil. Therefore, the maidens, virgins, love you. Draw me after you and let us run together. The king has brought me into his chambers." This is interesting because we then see that this bride, out of all the daughters of Jerusalem, was an unlikely candidate that was maltreated. Think of like Cinderella, which he says in Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verses 5 through 6, "I am black but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not stare at me because I am swarthy," which means black, "for the sun has burned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me caretaker of the vineyards, but I have not taken care of my own vineyard." So we see a bride who has rough, tan skin, who has been forced to work her brother's vineyards, that she is unable to take care of herself. Yet King Solomon has chosen her. Despite her background, the king refers to her in verse 8 as most beautiful among women. In chapter 6, verses 8 through 10 of Song of Solomon, the king points out why he desires her, and it is because she is pure and she is blessed. It says, "There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number, but my dove, my perfect one, is unique. She is her mother's only daughter. She is pure child of the one who bore her. The maiden saw her and called her blessed. The kings and concubines also, and they praise her saying, 'Who is this that grows like the dawn, as beautiful as the moon, as pure as the sun, as awesome as an army with banners?'" But who are these other women, these daughters of Jerusalem, that the bride and husband confer with throughout the book of the Song of Solomon? They are mentioned in chapter 2, verses 7, where it says, "I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, that you do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases." This same line that's spoken to the daughters of Jerusalem is repeated in chapter 3, verses 5, and also in chapter 8, verse 4. Although I like to mention in chapter 8, verse 4, the king tells them to swear that they will not wake up his bride. We see that it is the daughters of Jerusalem who decorate the chair that the king Solomon arrives into Jerusalem on the day of his wedding in chapter 3, verse 10. "He made its post of silver, its back of gold, and its seat of fabric, purple fabric, with its interior lovingly fitted out by the daughters of Jerusalem." We then see that the bride tells the daughters of Zion to gaze on their king's arrival on the day of the wedding in chapter 3, verses 11. "Go forth, O daughters of Zion, and gaze on King Solomon with the crown on which his mother has crowned him on the day of his wedding and on the day of his gladness of heart." Later we see that when the bride is searching for a husband, the daughters of Jerusalem are confused on what her husband must be like for her to beg for assistance in finding him in chapter 5, verses 8 through 9. This begins to show the distinction between the bride and the other daughters of Jerusalem, as she recognizes his greatness, but they are either confused or ignorant. It says, "I adjure you," and this is the bride speaking, "O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, as to what you will tell him, for I am lovesick." And this is the daughters of Jerusalem responding, "What kind of beloved is your beloved, O most beautiful among women? What kind of beloved is your beloved that you adjure us or beg of us for assistance?" By looking outside of the book of the Song of Solomon, maybe we can make some other connections of what the Shulamite bride represents and who are the daughters of Jerusalem or Zion. In Luke chapter 23, verses 28, we see that Jesus pities the daughters of Jerusalem while it's he who's being crucified. It says, starting in verse 26, "When they led him away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, coming in from the country, and placed him on the cross to carry behind Jesus. And following him was a large crowd of the people and of the women who were mourning and lamenting him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, 'Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry? Now, this is a reference to Jerusalem's later destruction by the Romans, as mentioned earlier in Luke chapter 19, verse 41. When he approached Jerusalem, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, if you had known in this day, even you, that the things which make for peace, but now they have been hidden from your eyes. For the day will come upon you when your enemies will throw up a barricade around, against you and surround you and them and hem you in on every side. And they will level you to the ground and your children within you, and will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation. However, going back to Luke chapter 23, verse 28, when he's about to be crucified, a lot of the verses, what he's saying are verses that he's taking from the minor prophets, which are also connected not just to the first destruction of the judgment of Jerusalem, but as we will take a look sooner, it's a prophecy of the judgment of the entire world. As we look at these verses, in Isaiah chapter 3, verses 16 through 17, we see how the daughters of Jerusalem are punished for their pride, rejecting the authority of God. Moreover, the Lord said, because the daughters of Zion are proud and walk with heads held high and seductive eyes, and go along with mincing steps and tinkle the bangles on their feet, therefore the Lord will afflict the scalp of the daughters of Zion with scabs, and the Lord will make their foreheads bare. I do find it important to kind of pause here and to make a connection to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, where women are supposed to recognize their subjugation to authority. And if they do not recognize men as their authority, then therefore they do not recognize God as their authority and are a shame. So, starting in chapter 1 of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 1 through 5, be imitators of me, just as I also am of Christ. Now I praise you because you remember me in everything and hold firmly to the traditions just as I delivered them to you. But I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of every woman, and God is the head of Christ. Every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head, but every woman who has her head uncovered while praying or prophesying disgraces her head, for she is one and the same as the woman whose head is shaved. So it makes sense how what we looked at earlier, how the daughters of Zion in Isaiah chapter 3, who reject the authority of God, God curses them with baldness. It's like, hey, you want to reject authority? Then, hey, you go bald. It's a connection that I kind of make, kind of take it as you will. I just thought it was something interesting. But moving on, in Jeremiah chapter 4, verses 30 through 31, the daughter of Jerusalem cries out like in pregnancy, for God has separated himself from her and allows her to fall to her enemies because of her actions. And you, O desolate one, what will you do? Although you dress in scarlet, although you decorate yourself with ornaments of gold, although you enlarge your eyes with paint, in vain you make yourself beautiful. Your lovers despise you. They seek your life. For I heard a cry as of a woman in labor, the anguish of one giving birth to her first child, the cry of the daughter of Zion gasping for breath, stretching out her hand, saying, ah, woe is me, for I faint before murderers. In Isaiah chapter 4, verses 4 through 6, we see how the daughters of Zion will be judged, and those who are unfaithful, daughters will be separated, while the remaining will become the cleansed bride that will later marry the Lamb, as seen in Revelation 21. For seven women will take hold of one man in that day, saying, we will eat our own bread, wear our own clothes, only let us be called by your name. Take away our reproach. In that day, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth will be the pride and adornment of the survivors of Israel. It will come about that he who is left in Zion, remains in Jerusalem, will be called holy. Everyone who is recorded for life in Jerusalem, when the Lord has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and purged the bloodshed of Jerusalem from her midst, by the spirit of judgment and the spirit of burning. Then the Lord will create over the whole area of Mount Zion and her assemblies a cloud by day, even smoke, and the brightness of a flaming fire by night, for over all the glory will be a canopy. There will be shelter to give shade from the heat by day, and refuge and protection from the storm and rain. In Isaiah chapter 1, verses 7 through 9, we see this is how God will purify his daughter by leaving a remnant. Your land is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your fields, strangers are devouring them in your presence. It is a desolation as overthrown by strangers. The daughter of Zion is left like a shelter in a vineyard, like a watchman's hut in a cucumber field, like a besieged city. Unless the Lord of hosts had left us a few survivors, we would be like Sodom. We would be like Gomorrah. In Zephaniah chapter 3, after the daughter of Jerusalem is cleansed, we see that the remnant that is left is the one that has become the bride to dwell with the Lamb. This is a huge verse, as it makes the connection that the previous verses are not just referring to the first destruction of Jerusalem as restoration, but the true restoration that will come at the end of time, seen again in Revelation. But I will leave among you a humble and lowly people, and they will take refuge in the name of the Lord. The remnant of Israel will do no wrong and tell no lies, nor will a deceitful tongue be found in their mouths, for they will feed and lie down with no one to make them tremble. Shout for joy, O daughter of Zion. Shout in triumph, O Israel. Rejoice and exult with all your heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. The Lord has taken away his judgment against you. He has cleared away your enemies. The King of Israel, the Lord, is in your midst. You will fear disaster no more. In that day it will be said to Jerusalem, do not be afraid, O Zion. Do not let your hands fall limp. The Lord your God is in your midst, a victorious warrior. He will exult over you with joy. He will be quiet in his love. He will rejoice with you with shouts of joy. However, why call daughters of Zion? Why call them daughters of Zion? Why call it daughter of Jerusalem? It is because daughters are cared for by their father. We have our father, the Lord, up in heaven. And daughters are also those who will be inheritors when their time has come for marriage. A marriage that, like we're starting to see, will ultimately come in the time of Judgment Day. For instance, we see that the early Jerusalem is mentioned as an unmarried virgin in 2 Kings chapter 19, 20 through 22, showing how yet this marriage has yet to actually happen, even though we have an establishment of the Old Testament Jerusalem. We see this when God chastises the Assyria for tormenting Israel in 2 Kings chapter 19, verses 20 through 22. She has despised and mocked you, the virgin daughter of Zion. She has shaken her head behind you, the daughter of Jerusalem. Whom have you reproached and blasphemed? Against whom have you raised your voice and haughtily lifted up your eyes? Against the Holy One of Israel. In Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9, we see the king, Jesus, arrive, and for the daughters of Zion, his future bride, to rejoice. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout in triumph, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and endowed with salvation, humble and mounted on a donkey, even on a colt, the foal of a donkey. And we see this to be a prophecy of Jesus when he arrives to Jerusalem. I find this a very similar scene, again, going back to the Song of Solomon, when the bride is seeing her husband, or her soon-to-be husband, arriving on their wedding day. In chapter 3, verses 6 through 8, what is this coming up from the wilderness like columns of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all scented powders of the merchant? Behold, it is the traveling couch of Solomon, 60 mighty men around it, of the mighty men of Israel. All of them are wielders of the sword, experts in war. Each man has a sword at his side, guardians against the terrors of the night. Similar to how the bride in Song of Solomon was forsaken by those around her and then crowned with glory, we see in Isaiah chapter 62 a similar scene with the church. Verses 1 through 5. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not keep quiet, until her righteousness goes forth like brightness and her salvation like a torch that is burning. The nations will see your righteousness, and all kings your glory, and we will be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord will designate. You will also be crowned of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. It will no longer be said to you, forsaken, nor to your land will it longer be said desolate. But you will be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Lord delights in you, and to him your land will be married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so your sons will marry you. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so your God will rejoice over you. This is similar to how the forsaken are restored in Micah chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. In that day, declares the Lord, I will assemble the lame and gather the outcast, even those whom I have afflicted. I will make the lame a remnant and the outcast a strong nation, and the Lord will reign over them in Mount Zion from now on and forever. As for you, tower of the flock, hill of the daughter of Zion, to you it will come. Even the former dominion will come, the kingdom of the daughter of Jerusalem. So who are the daughters of Jerusalem? In a sense, it is all of mankind, because God has provided all of mankind the ability to join the church, praise Jesus, become washed of their sins, to be metaphorically married to him on the day of reckoning. Like the Shulamite bride who recognizes her husband's glory, the daughters of Jerusalem, the world, are confused. So it is the world confused by why Jesus is so glorious, yet the chosen daughter, the Shulamite bride, understands his glory. Just how one daughter of Jerusalem was preferred by King Solomon out of all the daughters of Jerusalem, we see how on the judgment day, the daughter of Jerusalem will be purged and made pure on the day of her wedding. Through Christ and through judgment, leaving a remnant that is God's truly elected bride, whom he will continue to love and care for eternity. In Revelation chapter 21, it says, Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people. And God himself will be among them, and he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will no longer be any death. There will be no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. If there are any of those who wish to recognize your sins, purify yourself through the grace of God by confessing that Jesus is the Messiah, being baptized for your sins, and following his word, please come forward now as we stand and sing.